All right, what's up, class? This is Optimus Fields at My Living Truth, and we're at block height 643,603, and the price is 11,778. And we got Nick here today, so he'll introduce us.
Yeah, thanks, Optimus. I'm actually here for a change at the beginning. Finished drinks in quarantine early, and I'm really happy to come. It's always so nice whenever I finish drinks in quarantine and I open up Discord and I see all the people that come out here each and every single week. Like, it's always 10 to 20 people every week, and it's always so nice. So thank you all for coming out. It really means a lot to both
plus
of us.
Plus one. Thank you guys.
So without further ado, let's just get started with a quick introduction, starting with a 2A, 3 decks up at the top.
Hey guys, I'm a 2A, 3 decks. I'm a Colombian Bitcoiner. Glad to be here.
Let's go. Andrew W.
All right. Yeah, Andrew Howard, and I'm from Los Angeles, but I moved to Mexico to be, actually living in a somewhat free country. Moved here about 6 months ago, Marine veteran, and yeah, man, I love Bitcoin. It's awesome to talk with other people who have the same vision.
Awesome, dude. Next, we got Coin Icarus.
Hey, what's happening? I'm Coin Icarus, host of the Fun with Bitcoin podcast. And I just love being here, and I love talking about Bitcoin, and yeah, man, just the stack sats.
Let's go. Jestifer.
Hey, everybody. Jestifer here, and huge Bitcoin fan, and I like to get by on a fixed supply.
Oh, good one. Let's go. Next, we got great. Nico.
I think I can beat that. What's up, guys? My name is Nico, CEO of BitVault.com and the new BitVault podcast.
Next, we got Skeef. Skeef, you want to introduce yourself? We just started. Maybe he's trying to stay on today. We got Skeef. Oh, there we go.
Oop, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, how's it going? Saw this on Twitter. I think I joined one a couple of months ago. So I thought I'd check it out.
Cool, dude.
Glad to have you here.
Yeah, exactly. Next, we got Surfer Jim.
Oh, hey, thanks for having me again, guys. I love talking Bitcoin, and I love surfing, and the surf report for this coming week. Actually, it's been flat, but we're getting a swell. I'm stoked. Little tropical disturbance, and going to have waves for like 4 days in a row, so I am very stoked.
Let's go. Next, we got Nabismo.
What's up, guys? It's Nabismo, creator of the pre-corner site getcoin.io. Happy to be here. Thanks.
Let's go.
And last but certainly not least, we got Dylan.
What's up, guys? Dylan, or BTCization. I'm just happy to chat with you guys.
Awesome. All right, so this week we've had a lot of stuff going on in the Bitcoin world, and though we don't consider ourselves like a Bitcoin news site, we're going to go over some of this stuff to hash in some points for our pre-coiners and new coiners out there. So the first one is going to be on the topic of the Ether supply gate. So first of all, Jestifer, are you ready to stream some things?
Yeah, I think I am.
Okay. All right. So, for those that are unaware, our friends on Twitter, Pierre Rochard and Bitstein, started up some memetic warfare against Ether, and it was a simple question that they asked the Ethereum crowd, and it was, what was the total supply of Ether? And they weren't able to answer that, and it's still been, about a week, and we still don't know conclusively what the total supply of Ether is. And why this has, some meaning to all of us is because we all know that there's only ever going to be 21 million Bitcoins. And if Ether is trying to come over here and claim to be money again, and they don't know their total supply, that is definitely worrying. And if you're trying to hold Ether, then I really don't know what you're doing, because you don't even know how many you have of the total supply. So what we have over here on the screen for the noobs, and I'm going to just have Jestifer type in these commands, and then we'll chat about it. So it's very basic. If you run a Bitcoin node, you can type in some commands, and then you can know in a short amount of time, a couple minutes, how many Bitcoins there are in circulation at the moment. And so we'll pass it over to Jestifer real quick, and he'll type in the commands, and then we'll get everyone's opinion on it.
So yeah, I've got Bitcoin Core running 0.20. And so I opened up the console window, and so, you know, I got a, you know, warning, here be dragons. So in the bottom right, I'm going to type in get TX out set info. And that's going to go through the record of transactions and actually find out how many UTXOs are in existence. So I'll try and start these at the same time. I'm also going to use my Raspberry Pi that I use for my Lightning node. And for there, it'll be Bitcoin-CLI, get TX, TX, outset, info. I spell everything right?
Yeah, it looks like it.
All right. So I'll get that going. And I'll just grab the money supply here from Clark Moody's web node, and I'll just I'm just going to take some notes off to the side. But so that'll be running in the background, and it'll probably take a while, but we can just keep on cruising, and we can come back to this later.
Yeah, so it'll take a few moments, but I know Nico and Coin Icarus went over it pretty well. You guys want to jump in real quick, and then we'll just get everyone's opinions, because I know we're going to have some strong opinions on that one.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I can definitely start. So, I mean, I don't know which aspect you want to dive into, but it's just absolutely hilarious, because just on Twitter, you know, you're watching all of these different Ethereans, you know, calculate, you know, try to figure out, you know, what the total supply is, even what the current supply was. So they start to realize that, you know, quickly that they can't come up with any of these numbers. So then they start to come up with excuses, and we start to see things like it's bloatware to do these calculations. So I'm sorry. So you're the world computer, and you're trying to store value, and it's somehow bloatware to try to have a mechanism to accurately come up with that number consistently amongst all nodes. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Excuse, I apologize. I don't mean to swear, but seriously, that deserves a swear. Like, that's ridiculous.
I love the Bad Luck Brian meme someone made, and they photoshopped Vitalik's face on it, and it was like, "Bilge World supercomputer can't even run its own numbers," or something like that.
Savage. Yeah, dude, a lot of people beat it up on Twitter, but, and I know, Coin Icarus, I keep bringing up your tweet, but I really think that it summarizes the situation best, right? Which is kind of like, basically what Ethereum's trying to do is they're replacing the Federal Reserve, but with Ethereum devs, right? And like, because the Federal Reserve can't audit shit, but, like, you know, like, they're trying to be like the centralized entity that, you know, calls the shots. But they're just a bunch of developers, man, and that fucking sucks. And, like, with Bitcoin, you know, like, it doesn't matter who you are, big or small, you know, pleb or whale, whatever it is, like, you could just type in some simple commands on Bitcoin Core, and you can know exactly, you can know yourself exactly what the supply is. So, yeah.
And I guess we've been going over running a full node for weeks, but I guess this is a good point to emphasize that this is why we all run nodes. like Justifer said, he put it in the chat earlier. He, what he said, like, I don't trust anyone but my nodes. And so that's kind of the Bitcoin ethos. You know, as if my node is telling me that this is the information that's going on, well, I'm not going to trust your word for it. I'm just going to verify it. And so we're going to keep beating into your guys' heads to run a node and validate and verify all this for yourself so you don't have to trust anyone else to tell you what's going on. So, yeah, go.
Can I say something?
Get it, Nick.
I was just going to say, some of, like, the top Ethereum people, like, they can't run their own full node, but, like, what you said earlier, they can't run their own full node because it's extremely expensive and hard to do, which makes it more centralized. But one of, like, the top Ethereum people posted a screenshot, and he was like, oh, I found the total supply of Ethereum, and these numbers are based off some website. Like, he just took some random website's word for, oh, we found the Ethereum supply, which I'm pretty sure was wrong anyways. But their whole thing is just, like, don't verify, just trust that it works. And that's a terrible thing to do. So stick with Bitcoin, which is don't trust, verify.
And, I mean, Vitalik literally pointed to CoinMarketCap as the official way to check the Ether supply. Like, what?
Yeah. I saw some random person comment, and because he was fighting with a bunch of Bitcoin maxis, and he was like, I don't care if I can't validate the supply or find it. I trust Vitalik. Like, dude, you should not. Vitalik is one of the people you should never trust in the space.
Dude, you shouldn't trust anyone. That's
yeah.
just let an ETH pleb talk long enough, and he'll cell phone. So, anyone else? Jim, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this one. I know you'll wrap it up nicely.
Well, it was interesting watching Pierre continually just make very direct and easy requests from the perspective of an accountant, because that's what he learned. You know, he's trained in auditing. So I don't think he intended for it to build as much as it did and turn into what it turned into. It literally turned into a debate on Peter McCormack's show between Samson Moe and Vitalik, which I saw a screenshot of, maybe got recorded today, and maybe he'll release it soon. But it is kind of funny because it turned into this, what was it called, Supplygate? Like, nobody knows how much ETH is out there. That's ridiculous. You know, they've gone back and forth over the years whether it's a money or not, but it's a token on a proof of work blockchain. It's acting like money. They're trying to spin it as a world computer smart contract, DeFi, who knows what conflated configuration they want to turn it into. But it still operates in a similar way to Bitcoin. There's mining, there's addresses, there's coins that get pushed around and whatnot. But, you know, the whole point of a good money is one that's either strictly scarce like Bitcoin, or at least mostly scarce like gold, where nobody can just make as much as they want. Or, you know, in this case, you can't even tell how much is out there. So that's absurd for people to put so much trust. And yet there's, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars invested into it all over the world. And big, smart, supposedly smart, I'll put it, investor types and regulator types that look at these people and boy genius Vitalik as some, you know, something to be praised and worshipped, like this awesome, great invention in this giant business ecosystem, whatever you want to call it. And it's a Ponzi scheme. It's going to implode. It's absolutely hilarious because it never can be anything they need it to be, because Bitcoin can do everything that they want to do. And the Bitcoin ecosystem is rolling right along in the same direction in a completely different way, but completely trustless way, you know, where, you know, where we know that the whole system is set up where the users control. It's a consensus model where we all know how much is out there. We all verify our transactions on our own. We don't have to go to CoinMarketCap and, oh, how much is that? This is insanity. I can't believe they're serious. I can't believe they walk around and they try to have a logical debate, and every everybody's laughing. So I hope I'm still connected to you guys. Every once in a while, my phone cuts me off.
No, you're good. We heard that, Jim.
All right. Yeah, it's a joke. I'm laughing all weekend. I literally, some of you guys might have saw it. I hit a tweet when I went back and forth with Vitalik, and I suggested he read Human Action, and he responded that he did like 10 years ago, and I said apparently you didn't comprehend it, and then Pierre does a tweet something like, "What takes longer, reading Human Action or seeing Ethereum Node?" And I literally cracked up, literally laughing my ass off sitting up. So all I did was I kept hitting the smiley button. So I got towards the end, I go, hold on, I got to catch my breath. And then I did it until I ran out of characters. I was laughing my ass off, literally just sitting by myself. It was really comical. So anyway, it was fun part of 2020 to go with all the other craziness.
Yeah, that was good. Anyone want to add a few more shots to it? Yes, no. I think we got that one. Oh, someone's requesting Katie. Katie, they want your perspective on things.
Well, it was hilarious. It was absolutely hilarious. Totally made my days. But what I wanted to mention, Jesper had Clark's Moody's dashboard on the screen a couple of minutes ago. And in the latest episode of TFTC, he mentioned that it cost him $10 to run this whole thing. So I was like, okay, let's see who can come up with the same dashboard for Ethereum and how much it's going to cost for him to do all the same work just to grab, you know, data in the moment. Like there's supposed to be nothing hard in it. Yep.
There we go. And Jesper, it looks like we got a Bitcoin Core node to spit out some.
Yeah, we got a number. My laptop has just been cooking, just doing the fastest audit you've ever seen. But yeah, it looks like we've got, 18,459,854.628. So we'll be able to compare that. I'll just grab that. Be able to compare it later to Clark Moody's. So far, it's looking pretty similar, and we also got a total amount from a Raspberry Pi just now. And I don't know about you guys, but these two look like the exact same number to me.
That checks out.
There we go. And Clark Moody's is slightly different. And why would I trust that? Because someone else is running that. But I am running my own hardware and the Bitcoin Core software, which I validated myself. So this is what I'm going to go by.
And dude, most importantly, you have your own copy of the blockchain. And when you run Bitcoin Core, it's comparing that to other copies of the blockchain, right? So the software makes sure that you have the latest copy of the blockchain, the latest block, and then it compares it to other nodes, and it says, okay, this is the latest block. This is the best. This is the longest blockchain, whatever. And yeah, but you can only do that if you have the entire copy of the blockchain. And the thing about Ethereum and why these people have not been able to do it is because it's so goddamn resource heavy, right? That it's expensive as hell. But with Bitcoin, you could literally, man, you could download this on a computer, right? Like I wouldn't say it's very resource heavy, but anyone could do it. It's really not that crazy.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I've got a Raspberry Pi 3, which is, you know, like it's not even the latest generation Raspberry Pi. It's a $60 computer. And the fact that, like auditing the Fed was an entire campaign premise for Ron Paul, you know, back in the day. And now suddenly, like, knowing the entire supply of money doesn't matter anymore. It boggles my mind that, you know, the ETH heads can come out and say that it doesn't matter. Clearly it does.
That's just a lack of understanding of what money actually is, in my opinion. If you can have infinite money, infinite Ethereum. That's no different than fiat.
The Federal Reserve on the blockchain, guys. That's what we need in life.
Except hey, Vitalik's in charge, and I don't think you want that.
Bitcoin.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, go, Jim.
I was wondering, Jessica, are you able to reach out to Clark Moody and find out where he pulls his data from and see if you could figure out the disparity?
I was thinking about that, but
I'm sure yeah. he would entertain it. That guy sounds like a nice guy. I mean, I don't know him. I've heard him on other people's podcasts. Or reach out to Matt O'Dell or Marty and talk to those guys. And, you know, because it's worth looking at, you know. There's a reason why the numbers aren't the same, because we all know that the whole point is that we're all supposed to be able to verify. Like, if I had a note, my node just crashed on me. I was just on with tech support with these guys, so I can't even check mine right now. But, you know, I should get the same number as you, technically. So,
yeah, hit me up whenever, and I'll run the numbers with you at the same time in parallel. We can compare.
I've been running a Start9 personal server, and it just, I had a power outage last week. It might have done something. And since then, I can't resync to it. And I was on with the guys today, and I'm going to see them at Fitblock Boom. They told me to bring it with me. So right now, I could hook up another node. I'd have to work on it. And I don't know how much time I got for that. So I'm without my own node right this minute. But yeah, you know, the bottom line is we should all get the same number. That's all. If you're going to run the audit, you did it in 10 minutes. Like, if we all did it at the same time, we're all scanning the same blockchain at the same time, we all should have the same UTXO set. You know,
totally. Yeah, you don't need to be
there. That's the whole point of having a ledger that matches all around the world. That's the whole point of this whole thing. So I highly recommend you reach out to him and see what's up, and reach out to whoever else. Matt O'Dell will talk to you for sure, and he'll be able to help. And he knows a lot of smart devs in New York City that you don't really, that are not on podcasts or on Twitter much or whatever. There's a lot of people.
Fantastic.
You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Yeah. I'll reach out to him. To them both.
Beautiful, beautiful. We got Sam Pumpkin Toshi. You want to just ask that question? If you unmute yourself.
Yes. So I just want to know if I should be using Tails and Electrum on a USB with a hardware device to sign transactions, or should I just go fully offline and fully off hardware to sign transactions for long-term storage?
Okay. Dude, here's the thing. So security, look, you have to find a sweet spot, right? Because problem with security is that if you overcomplicate things, it's just as bad as having light security, right? So you need to find what you feel comfortable with, and that's an extremely personal question, right? I'm familiar with the setup that you're saying, right? But I think that you could find just as much security, for example, leveraging the power of multisig and geographically separating your keys, than going through a cold storage setup where you have a dedicated computer, you take the Wi-Fi card out, and you have that as, you know, that you have that as literally a cold storage device where you could sign transactions from that device, and then you could import the signed transaction into a device that's online, and then you could broadcast it. So, dude, there's different solutions, right? Like, there's no perfect answer. There's just trade-offs, right? So you kind of have to, like, really break it down. And like, okay, this is solution number one, this is solution number two, this is solution number three. And these are the pros and cons to each one of the solutions. And then you have to say, okay, which one do I feel comfortable with? Not only from a security aspect, but also from the technical aspect. Because if you overcomplicate, and I've seen this happen, and it's a disaster. If you overcomplicate things, then you're literally locking yourself out, right? So it needs to be this perfect balance of security, usability, and convenience, right? I suggest to everybody, dude, just geographically separate your keys, right? So keep one. So, you know, if you use two or three or three or five, right, it's up to you. But it depends, you know, it also depends, you know, how much you have in cold storage, right? Whatever you feel comfortable with. But let me just give you two of three as an example, right? So you keep one key, either, you know, either whether it's a cold card. Cold cards kind of bugged right now, so I'd kind of stay away from it. But with Electrum, so I would use either a Ledger or a Trezor, and I would write down the 24 word seed, and I would keep one of those at home in a fireproof safe. Or you could buy the metal plate, right, where you could literally put in the 24 word seed into the metal plate. Then you keep one of those in your home in a safe, right? Then you get a safety deposit box in a bank, right? I know it's funny. And you keep a 24 word in a metal plate there. And then you find another location, whether it's at home, whether it's at work, whether it's whatever, it just has to be geographically separated. Why? Because you want to protect against a $5 wrench attack, right? Someone finds out that you have Bitcoin. We find out Nick's real name. We find out his address. We show up to his house, you know, and if he has his keys geographically separated, even though we have a $5 wrench on top of Nick's head, he literally can't give it to us, right? So that's the whole point, man. And none of these solutions are bulletproof, but they don't need to be. It just needs to be good enough so that you can sleep at night.
Yeah, I think that's great. Great advice. And Sam, just also, it just kind of depends your setup, like what you're trying to do. If you want to, you know, send transactions in the near future, then, you know, you'll pick a certain setup. But if you're just going to basically have like a watch only wallet where you're just stacking your sats and you're not going to touch for, you know, a long while, then you might have a different setup. So it's kind of like a personal decision, like Nico said, but whatever you feel most comfortable is probably the best way to go about it.
Sweet. So thanks, guys.
Can I ask, what are you like hoping to achieve with, you know, combining Tails, you know, that privacy focused operating system with the hardware device?
I just wanted to stack sets instead of buying a cold card because it's fucking expensive, $1 billion.
That makes total sense. Because, you know, this is free software that's out there that you can use. I see, like, if you're using Tails and it's going to be internet connected, and so that's already an additional risk model. Although it's routing all your internet through Tor if you decide to turn internet on in Tails.
Right.
So
dude, like if you're working on a budget, what you could do, right, is because exactly what Justifer said, right? Like it, you know, you kind of want a dedicated device for cold storage, right? Like you want a device that's not connected by the internet.
If so it's going to cost me anyway.
Not necessarily. And you could always buy, you know, a first edition Trezor and go with that, right? And I know that that has vulnerabilities, but as long as when you connect it to your computer, that computer is offline. And this is where Tails could benefit you, right? Because you launch up Tails and you make sure that the Wi-Fi is turned off somehow, right? And you know that because it's kind of like sandboxed, right? You know that it's not compromised because you're starting up a new, you know, whatever. And then you only access Electrum through that. And then when you spin up your regular computer, right, you can go online. Just make sure, you know, if you're ultra paranoid, make sure that you don't plug in your Trezor when you do that, right? So, like, there's different ways to, like, you know, kind of go around it. But I always suggest to people, especially if you're, like, a psychopath like me that has... I think I sent a screenshot to Nick the other day where we literally have like negative dollars in our bank account. And you literally have everything in Bitcoin. Like, I would suggest using multisig, right? You have to, man, at that point, you know, because the awesome part about multisig is that you don't have to trust one company, right? Like, and I'm going to kind of dox myself a little bit, but just for educational purposes, in my multi-key setup, I don't only use cold card. I use cold card, Trezor, and Ledger, right? So I'm not trusting one single company to create a single point of failure. And that's super paranoid, tinfoil hat or whatever, but it makes me sleep well at night, right? So you kind of have to like play around with your own setup and really put a lot of thought into it. But the benefit is that you're not going to have to do that many times. You only have to do that one.
That's good advice.
Beautiful.
Even I'm not a big fan of Ledger. And I always give Sam shit for it, and I've been peer pressuring him into getting a cold card. But, yeah, like, like, I totally get that, why you'd want to use all three.
And just, this is a little off topic, but a quick PSA, 283 decks confirmed the same coin amount as Jestifer on his own node, and he wants to say eat shit Ethereum. Anyways, continue the conversation. Actually, Sam, are you good? You good on that one?
Yeah, I'm perfectly fine. That's great. I think I might buy a cold card just to make Nick happy, and then I can.
Yeah, it's like
settle the heat.
Yeah, it's like it's at a certain point. It's like you know you pay a little bit to have a little trade off in convenience. Or if you're a lot more technical, then you can do most of the stuff for free or for less price. But I think, you know, the cold card's a pretty good trade-off. Just
careful trying to do it yourself, bro. That's all. Like, I've seen catastrophes, right?
Yeah.
So, exactly. Like, know your technical limitations, right? And kind of figure it out. But I agree with Optimus and I agree with Nick in the sense that, dude, like, you know, it depends how much you have, right? But at one point, you're going to want to look into a hardware wallet, because if you do what the hardware wallet does, like, you know, like, and you try to do that, try to mimic that security by yourself, it's just a lot harder, right? So, like, it's just it gets to a point where, like, you're going to want a hardware wallet, right?
All right. Well, I think we'll move on to the next topic. And actually, this one comes from 283dex. He asked a question about mining. Is there any work being done to avoid or be prepared against a state-level attack on mining pools? And is it possible to create your own mining pools and aggregate with others to bring some resilience? And so, we'll let Nico jump in. But I know for sure that the first question answer is yes. But Nico, go in on it.
Okay, so I'll start with the second question, which is it possible to start a mining pool? Absolutely. Anyone can start a live mining pool. The problem is, like, you could technically mine yourself, right? And eventually, mathematically, you will find a block, right? The only thing is, if you have like 0.00001% of the hash rate, mathematically speaking, you know, you're not going to find a block for a very long time. And at the end of the month, you need to pay your electricity bill. That's why people decide to pool. Pools aren't bad. Pools just make it so that if I mine, for example, I use Ampool, right? Because I buy my miners from Bitmain. And not so much anymore, but I have a good relationship with them, and they give me a good fee, right? So I've been mining with Ampool for a very long time. And the benefit about using a pool is that you get consistent mining rewards, right? Because it's just math, man. If they own or if they have 20% of the hash rate, you know that if you find a block or you know that the next block found has a 20% chance of getting that reward, right? So that's why people decide to use a pool, and you could absolutely start one yourself. It's just, dude, you're not gonna get that. You're not gonna get that mining reward in a long time, right? But you could do it, man. You know. And then the first question is protect against a state level attack. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a very good question, right? And there's two components to it, right? You kind of have to think about the economics of it, right?
Well, specifically on mining pools.
Okay, yeah. So so like what you're trying to say is that like a state takes over a mining pool? Is that the question?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So that's a great question. Okay. So there's this misconception about mining pools, right? So I mine with Ampool, right? If I notice they start playing, if they start cheating, right? Like there's something fishy going on, either I don't get a reward or something goes on, I'm going to switch to another pool immediately, right? And it's not a principle, it's not like ideals, it's just it literally costs me money that they're fucking around with it. So as soon as a state, right, would, you know, try to hijack a pool, so to speak, they would need to pay everyone mining rewards for those people to stay on the pool. Do you get what I'm trying to tell you? And the economics of it is very interesting. And I give a lot of credit for Satoshi for this. It's actually more profitable to mine than it is to cheat, right? It's just considerably more profitable. And the longer that Bitcoin survives and the more the hash rate goes up, and I think I touched upon this a couple weeks ago, that if you want to look at the health of Bitcoin, don't look at the price. Look at the hash rate, because the hash rate signifies the security of the Bitcoin blockchain. And in my opinion, right, people could have a different opinion. That's the value proposition. That's what gives Bitcoin its current $11,800 price, right? So for a state actor to, let's say, 51% attack the chain, first of all, they're not going to get anything from it, right? Because a 51% attack only works if you want to double spend coins that you already have, right? So let's say the United States, let's say Colombia, let's say whatever, wants to move in and, you know, fuck around with Bitcoin. Dude, they're just going to make all of us a fuck ton richer, because none of us are going to sell our fucking cold storage shit. And they're going to have to buy a bunch of coin to make that 51% attack worth their time. And they're going to have to dump those coins on exchanges as well, right? And remember that the awesome part about the Bitcoin blockchain is that we are all looking at it 24/7 by running nodes. And there's people that, you know, have vested interest in this, right? So they have to make sure that, you know, nothing's going on. So everyone's always looking at it, has so much eyes on it, that if there was some the thing is, it wouldn't make economical sense, and they wouldn't be able to take away your coins right now. I think me and CoinIncris were talking about this earlier, the chain rewrite days, which would be the amount of days that it would take you to completely rewrite the entire Bitcoin chain and tell all the other people on the network that you now have the longest chain, is 520 days, right? So the annual revenue in mining is, I think it's like 5.2 or 5.8 billion a year. So think about that, right? Like, it's extremely expensive. And guess what? If you played by the rules, you would make a fuck ton. Thanks, CoinIncris. It's 532 days. And if you played by the rules, dude, you're going to make a fuck ton more money. If you had that many resources to mine, you're going to make a lot more money playing by the rules than by cheating, right? And that's kind of like the genius in proof of work. It's that the incentives all line up. And there's a great example of what happened when someone tried to hijack the chain, right? It's a beautiful, and I think that it was an inevitability, and it really proved something about Bitcoin's resilience. And that was the Bitcoin Cash and I don't want to say Bitcoin Core, because it really was Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash fork. That's what happens when the biggest mining consortium in the world, right, which was Bitmain at the time, not so much anymore, they tried to take control of the blockchain. They said, listen, we own the majority of the hash rate, and it was beautiful. The node said, go fuck. Oh, sorry, Jim. No, you know what? It's justified. It's justified here. They all said, go fuck yourself at the same time. And we all know where Bitcoin Cash is today. And I'm not talking about the price. I'm talking about the hash rate. And we all know where the Bitcoin hash rate is. So I hope that answers your question.
Absolutely. Thanks, Nico.
Awesome. And I think you got a perfect segue with the fork, because I guess I probably should have organized these topics a little better. But another current event that happened this week was we got to 1,000 BTC locked up in the Lightning Network. And so one of the main contentions of the fork wars was how to scale Bitcoin properly. BTC wanted to keep the block size limit under, well, there was a compromise, but they wanted to keep a small block size limit, and then Bitcoin Cash wanted to have big blocks so that, you know, we can get more quote unquote economic throughput onto the chain. But to connect it with the Ethereum supply gate. As we can see, the more information that the node has to download, the more expensive it is to run a node, and the harder it is for everyone to verify it. And so Bitcoin BTC wanted to keep the block size limit small so that it doesn't cost too much to verify with your own personal nodes. And it seems like we're scaling pretty well, considering that Lightning is kind of taking off. It's taken a little while for it to kind of get out of just being like a little toy, as a lot of people would want to call it. But now we have 1,000 Bitcoins locked up in Lightning, and that seems very bullish in my opinion. And what do you guys think on that news?
Yeah, there's lots of ways that we could scale, I think what they recognized is that if you make the block size larger, then it increases the cost to actually run a node and to make sure that everyone's, you know, verifying all the Bitcoin that they have and that they're not creating it out of thin air, which is the whole problem that we're trying to solve. So kind of getting away from that cost, that externality, was super important. And I'm a huge Lightning fan. So the fact that you can not only scale Bitcoin really well, but also add instant settlement. So you can pay for your cup of coffee, you can do the microtransactions, and it can be done in a flash. That's the beauty of, you know, the Lightning Network for a scaling solution. And that's kind of the main motivator. One, scaling, so we can get Bitcoin for the rest of the world, and we can all use it at the same time, and it won't start breaking things or cause huge transaction fees, so we can get to that medium of exchange. That's the main motivator.
Beautiful. We have $11.6 million dollars worth of value on Lightning. Super reckless. Hit it, Coin Icarus.
Yeah, no, I was just going to add that, like, it's also, you know, I mean, when I first got into it, we were probably at around like 585 BTC, you know, in Lightning. So I've seen it go up, you know, like pretty much, you know, approximately 100% in terms of the amount of Bitcoin that's locked into Lightning. But I think that, you know, if we look at it symbolically, right, what does that mean? It's much more about the fact that people have more confidence in Lightning. So that, you know, like to lock that much up, like you just said before, right, it's super reckless. But the point is that the technology for the nodes has gotten better. The software for the, you know, the wallets have gotten better. The, you know, the user experiences have gotten easier. You know, you feel less friction when you go and, you know, you move Satoshis around in Lightning. And, you know, that's what happens when you start to, you know, really build a proper second layer that's beginning to, you know, really take form and start to mature as, yes, this will be the second layer, so to speak.
Absolutely. And I'll just add to that, Coin Icarus, and I think I mentioned this earlier on our show, but basically I was talking to Danny Scott, the CEO of Coin Corner, and he actually told me something awesome, which was the first Lightning payment for one Bitcoin was made, right? And that was pretty crazy. I think the limit's like 0.16, but what they did is they consolidated a bunch of nodes to make that one payment. Of course, I don't know the technicalities here, so don't beat me up, but I thought that was pretty cool. And, you know, that's just one big middle finger to the Bitcoin Cash people, because, you know, it's right now. Yeah, thanks, Cornicker. So 0.16 is the limit. But what they did is they consolidated. I don't know the technicalities of it. And they made one. Yes. Thanks, Jessifer. You're the man. A multi-path payment. Exactly. And the total payment was for one Bitcoin. And I think that's so cool, because that just gives one big middle finger to everyone saying like, oh, Lightning is just for big payments. I mean, for small payments and all that. That's BS. And it was just proven. And that's insane, because that payment was immediate, it was fast, and it was extremely cheap, right? And this is just the beginning of it. So I can't even imagine where Lightning's going to be like 5 years from now, right? Like, if this is what people are able to do today with the current limitations of the technology today, I have no idea what people are going to be doing in 5 years from now. And that really, really, like, if I was a shitcoin, that, like, is, I'm just a shitcoin because, you know, I have more transactions per second and, you know, I'm whatever, I would be scared. Again, Jin, I'm sorry. I'd be scared shitless if I heard about that news.
That's awesome. So it was using multipath payments and not like a Wumbo channel?
Correct. It was using it. So again, I'm not so much a technical guy, but from what I understood, speaking to Danny, and this is all recorded, by the way. He said that it was using multiple. I don't know the terminology. It's just for the man in this, but maybe he could add to it. But I think it was using multipath payment. Correct.
Awesome.
Yes. Sometimes it's called AMP also, yeah. But I think people are moving towards multipath payment. As far as like another, you know, Lightning Network update, I've been talking a lot with Alex Bosworth, and he's been putting together, you know, multiple channel opens to happen all in one transaction. So he opened, I think it was 13 channels all in a single transaction. For a size of 750 bytes. So the fact that you can, that's going to be, that was well over a Bitcoin in a single transaction. And now you have Lightning channels. And he paid a 2 sat per byte fee. So that's just ridiculously powerful as far as, you know, turning your, you know, Bitcoin, which might be constrained by the mempool, into these rapid channels where you can have instant settlement and transfer large amounts. So really, really bullish on Lightning, because that adds our medium of exchange to an amazing store of value.
Yeah,
that's... I have a question.
Get it.
Yeah, so I'm not a huge technical guy, but I want to understand, from a technical perspective, can you explain how the instant settlement would work in regards to closing off the channel?
Yeah, you actually very rarely need to close channels. I think of, like, you know, maintaining a channel like a business relationship, where if I'm going to close a channel, I'm actually going to, you know, reach out to the other node operator and, you know, tell them, you know, the reason why I'm closing it and that type of thing, because you know, these are relationships that you're forming, and they should be for the long term. And as far as like managing the liquidity, which is sort of like a problem that comes up with Lightning, is that if I open you know, say it just for ease of numbers, a one Bitcoin channel to you, I can only send one Bitcoin to you. I can't send two Bitcoin, because, you know, now the liquidity is all on your side. So I would have to open up another channel elsewhere, and that could still route to you, so I can send, you know, two Bitcoins to you. So you don't actually have to close the channel at the end of it to have final settlement. There's already an agreement between the two parties. Hey, like, this payment has been taken care of, so that if we ever decide to close a channel, we'll actually get the corresponding amounts, and everything will, you know, all the accounting works.
Optimus, do you mind if I ask Justifer a question?
Hit it.
Justifer, how would you, if someone wanted to use the Lightning Network and they had no experience, and you've obviously messed around with multiple different things, how would you tell them to get started?
I think, first of all, if, you know, complete noob, I'd get them to download the Strike wallet, because, you know, that's an amazing on-ramp. Hook up your bank account and you can start participating in the, in the Lightning Network and sending payments. And you don't even have to worry about taxes because it's all in fiat, but you just send Lightning. It's just Lightning is just the payment rails, and it's an amazing payment rail. So, and then after that, I might recommend like Phoenix Wallet, and that you're going to have a little bit more exposure to things. If you want to get down in the nuts and bolts, then you, there's tons of options available to you, like Eclair, or a Raspberry Pi, like I'm running.
Or Breeze is pretty good, like a compromise of technical and ease of use.
Totally. And I've only listed the non-custodial options, and there's a whole realm of custodial options, but I don't like those. I like to be completely in control of my own money because I like being in the driver's seat.
Awesome. Thanks, bro.
All right. I'm going to change topics real quick. Last week, Jim was telling us, I'm pretty sure it was on the show, he was telling us about the company MicroStrategy that was going to invest in Bitcoin or use some of their cash reserves into Bitcoin. And this week it made a pretty big splash on the scene. And apparently they bought $250 million worth of Bitcoin, something like 21,100 and something Bitcoins. And so, hey, Jim, do you want to jump in and give a little recap on that one?
Yeah, so I was speaking with Adam Meister last week. He does the One Bitcoin Show every day. And he brought it to my attention. And I looked into it a little bit. And sure enough, the CEO made a statement at, I guess, the last quarterly meeting that they had, that they were considering holding some of their cash balance in Bitcoin instead of USD. And the company is a very large tech company worldwide, and their stock is owned by even larger hedge firms like BlackRock. And so I happen to be listening to, I think it might have been Saifedean today, or George, who was he talking with? Shoot, I can't think of the guy's last name. But George Gammon, I think it is.
Yeah.
They were on a podcast, and I think they mentioned the fact that if they were going to make this decision to move a bunch of cash like that, the hedge funds that own their stock would have been notified because they can't afford to have a negative price move on their stock by doing something risky that the market would perceive to be risky. And these hedge fund managers, you know, get sort of blindsided by it or whatever. And that I could see that kind of old boys club going on between the people that are way up high like that in the system. So the fact that they actually went ahead and did it is a big move. It didn't really affect the price, but that trade was an over-the-counter trade, and it was probably executed before they announced it anyway. So the fact is, though, that they took their cash out of U.S. dollars and put it into Bitcoin because they're going to sit on it there instead of on USD, which means they probably think they weren't going to spend that for a year or two. They may have had somebody smart enough to tell them that, you know, we're about to explode with the price, which we all think and many people believe, and the price has done quite well. And there's fundamental reasons why it is very likely to go up, and there's a lot of economic reasons happening all around us that are likely to help push it up. And then you get a big corporation like this that says, yeah, I think I agree. And what are his buddies at the country club talking about, all of them now? You see what Bill did last week? He bought all that Bitcoin. Yeah, I don't know what his real name is. I'm just saying. You know, this is like people are talking, man, all over the world about this. And slowly but surely, a bunch of them are going to say, you know, we ought to maybe do this. Maybe a little less, but let's get some. Look, Crazy Dave Portnoy just got a bunch. Like, hey, you know, it's happening. It's literally happening. And there's only so much. I think they bought the equivalent of like 23 days worth of the supply. Like, if they were buying it brand new every time another block came out, it equals like 23 days worth. And I just thought, holy, imagine if they literally just bought every block's worth and no one else could have any for 23 days. That's a pretty crazy thing. Like, there's no markets like that. Like, nothing exists like that. It's very unusual. Very unique and very good for Bitcoin in the long run. So there you go. That's my take.
Yeah, and I just to add on to what Jim was saying, it's uber bullish, right? Like in the micro sense, like I think their stock went up 10%, like right when they announced that. And I think that that country club analogy is excellent because, you know, I've been saying this was going to happen for like 2 years, right? The public company that's publicly traded. And remember, because they're publicly traded, they have to get an okay. And I think they're owned 20 to 30%. Like I think it's 20 to 40% of their stock is owned by Vanguard, which is a huge hedge fund.
And BlackRock.
And Vanguard had to, yeah, thanks, Optimus. And they had to give the okay, the go ahead for them to purchase this. And it further validates and it further mainstreams Bitcoin, which it's not necessary, but it's cool that it's happening. And I absolutely think Jim's right. There's going to be a bunch of other companies that are going to follow suit. Now, the next step that's going to happen, in my opinion, and I think it's going to happen in this current epoch, is a small country is going to announce that it's going to have it as part of its reserves.
Bullish, super bullish. Jump in, Coinicus.
Okay, so just quickly, I wanted to say again, you know, this is one of those symbolic things, right? So this company, like a lot of public companies, are often incentivized to buy back their own shares. When they have a lot of cash on the side, they're not, you know, it's not really worth it for them to leave it in cash, certainly because they have a lot of it. They get a preferred, you know, shitty interest rate, but they're obviously much more incentivized to buy back their own shares or to buy another company, you know, like, because essentially what happens is that when a company has to give back money to its shareholders, it's because they're saying we can't use that money better than giving it back to you. Okay, so when a company buys back its own shares, they usually, what that signals is that, hey, you know, we believe in the strength of our company and we think the shares are cheap. So regardless of all those metrics, they looked at all of this and they chose Bitcoin. So
bullish.
Yeah, man, it's huge.
Good point.
So bullish, guys. So bullish. And I mean, we could probably go on this one for a good time. We talked about this last week that you know, the next part of this bull run is going to be seeing big players come in and start using Bitcoin as their cash reserves. And just like a little segue, and I'd like to get everyone's topic and we're going to, or everyone's perspective, and we're going to try to keep it short tonight. But as Jim brought up, everyone's favorite day trader on Twitter, Dave Portnoy, I guess, has officially invested a good amount of money into Bitcoin. And so let's just talk about that one and end this on a funnier, positive note. So I know Dylan's got some perspectives on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it's good for this space. Like, I mean, just to get eyes on it, he has 1.7, 1.5 million followers. And so like, the Winklevoss twin, like, interview or little like 10-minute clip he put on today was pretty embarrassing. Like, they seemed kind of, like, they know what they're talking about. But the way they dumbed it down and like their main value prop argument, like, oh, the gold asteroid mining was just, it sounded so stupid. Like, I'm sure we would have rather had, like, you know, Marty Bentschill, which would have made more sense. But like, it's going to get people down the rabbit hole. I mean, like a certain percentage or proportion of his 1.5 million people are going to just, you know, maybe it's a touch point or like, you know, they already had come across Bitcoin 4 or 5 times and they finally get down the rabbit hole. And like, as you know, number go up technology, the underlying technology behind Bitcoin, as that, you know, starts working its magic, you're going to have just a more and more resilient, hopefully like globally decentralized, or not decentralized. I mean, it is decentralized already, but like decentralized ownership, you know, and just having more Bitcoin dispersed into the hands of more and more people, making it like a more resilient economy and keep expanding the global network.
Nick, what are your thoughts?
fuck that guy.
Yeah,
basically. Dude, like, the one thing I hate is someone coming into the space who has no idea what Bitcoin's about, doesn't know anything about it, and he just comes in here and he's like, oh, yeah, I've made some money doing whatever I do. I don't even know what he does in his free time. Like, I don't even know how he's made his money or got his fame. Like, I know nothing about this dude. But, like, it just annoys me when he comes in here and tries to, like, act like hot shit, and he's like, he's pretty much acting like he's better than all the Bitcoiners, and he's like, oh, you know, blah, 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 like, you should be so happy here to have me. It's like, no, fuck you, dude. Like, I don't care if you're here. I mean, if you want to come pump my bags, like, go right on ahead, but, like, it just annoyed me seeing, like, I would comment something under his Twitter post, and some of these other Bitcoiners are, like, defending him so hard. They're like, dude, that's the day trader, dude. Like, he's so cool, man. You gotta respect and look up to him. Like, no. Like, he can earn my respect on Twitter. Because, I don't know, like, I know I'm kind of going off on, like, a stupid rant here, but, like, it's, I just don't care for the dude. I really don't. I mean, he can pump my bags, but fuck him.
Hopefully he doesn't end up with fucking anything, or he's buying a whole two or three Bitcoin at fucking a million because he got wrecked on shitcoins.
Yeah, like,
you know what I mean?
He didn't do any of his own research. The dude invited two big shitcoiners to his house. They tag-teamed him and got him to buy $250,000 worth of a shitcoin. That's literally been pumping nonstop, and will it pump more? Probably.
Real talk, though, like, do you think the Winklevoss twins own any Link, or, like, it just drives their revenue? Like, I feel like if I wish Dave would have asked, okay, so, well, what's your portfolio? You know what I mean? Because the Winklevoss, dude, they're going to be, like, two of the richest people in the world in this decade.
So, in my opinion, they added shitcoins to expand their revenue stream.
Yeah.
But those dudes only hold Bitcoin.
Yeah.
They, like, of course. As in, like, cold storage. And I actually know their cold storage setup. And it's what I was saying earlier, geographically separated keys. And they use, oh my God, I forgot the name of the hardware they use, but they don't use private keys. They use, like, this dedicated, like, kind of computer-esque thing, but it's super crazy, and it's literally purposely built to store private keys, right? And what they do is that they geographically separate them. I think they hold some in, like, a safety deposit box in Argentina. They hold some in New York, and then they hold some in, like, another continent. And, dude, they need to put all those keys together in order to, like, you know, fuck with their huge whale pile of orange coins, right? So, man, it's really interesting. But yeah, they only hold, to get back on point, they only hold Bitcoin, but they definitely peddle shit coins to accumulate more BTC. But don't be fooled, man, because David Portney, dude, that guy is smart, okay? Like, what you're seeing is an act. Like, it's all an act, right? And I totally agree that it's very cringy, but and I think that the Winklevoss, they do it for the clout, man. They do it for the engagement on Twitter, because they know, right? It's a win-win situation for Portney, right? It's like, look, the Winklevoss twins are in my house, right? More engagement for them. And then for the Winklevoss twins, it's like, look, we're the Bitcoin guys. Go to Gemini and buy shitcoin or Bitcoin from us, right?
Mm-hmm. Hey, so yeah. Nick. I'm just looking at a tweet from Brady at Swan Bitcoin, who said that they used the $250,000 to buy $200,000 in Bitcoin and $50,000 in Link token, which I checked on CoinMarketCap. It's not even the top 100.
It's number five.
Not that that matters. What?
It's number five, I think. It just passed Bcash.
Oh, it's Chainlink? Is the same as Link?
Yeah, it's Chainlink.
Oh, so then, all right, so it's not... not that low. Well, obviously number five. Yeah, I got you. It's ahead of Bcash and Bitcoin SD. All right, so I didn't realize Chainlink was Link. Just goes to show you how much I give a crap about that stuff. But so a guy created a Brady's tweet is, so who's going to start the Stool Presidente, that's his Twitter, portfolio tracker, and somebody named Beef or Bitcoin One says, "Funny, I'm way ahead of you. This will be fun." So he created a little flow chart showing how much Bitcoin he has, at what price he bought it, and, you know, like, trend in 24 hours, I guess. So I guess he's going to, maybe let's see, I'll keep posting what this guy portfolio, his little mini two thing portfolio is going to do. But he put most of it in Bitcoin. So, you know, he's joking around about throwing away 50 grand on Link because he probably looks at it as a business expense.
Yeah, exactly. I think, like, honestly, the Winklevoss twins did a pretty horrible job, but anybody, or at least, like, if you understand Bitcoin, can give an elevator pitch for, like, and depending on how deep you want to go, who your audience is, etc., it can vary, but you can give a pretty brief pitch on why you should own Bitcoin, and like, they should be able to understand. The average person, like, one way or another, there should be some, but how can you say that with Link? Like, what's the case for owning Link? It pumps my bet. Like, what does it do, man? Like, what? Why do I hold this? And, like, just get into that, like, first principle type argument. Like, and, you know, they're going into smart contracts and yada yada. It's like, dude, it's a pump and dump shit coin. Like, we've seen this 100 times.
Just for you. Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Nico. I was gonna say, just for wants to get some thoughts in here. Well, he doesn't want to, but I'm gonna force him to.
Sure. You know, thanks. I tend to think Dave Portnoy is playing more of a satire role, because this is the same guy that a couple of weeks ago, he was pulling Scrabble tiles, like, out of a bag to pick what stock to invest in, because he was like, stocks only go up. Exposing the fact that we're just printing money and it's going straight into Wall Street, and kind of exposing the fact that, you know, the rules are made up and the points don't matter. So, like, here he has Tyler and Cameron Winklevoss, who own Gemini Exchange, and he was asking them about, like, oh, can I create my own coin and we can pump and dump it, which would probably be a securities violation or something. Like, he got them to be the Winklevoss twins to be on board with helping him create his own coin and pumping and dumping it, which kind of exposes the entire business model of the Gemini Exchange as these are total shitcoin casinos. So I'm really excited about, like, that aspect of it, but he might be playing the part of an idiot and might be a little bit smarter than he's letting on.
Dude, he's Barstool totally... Sports creates a cryptocurrency, I'm gonna lose it, dude.
Dude, he totally, dude, those guys, I'm telling you, man, those guys are, they're all smart, and they know exactly what the fuck they're saying, and they know that the asteroid mining and saying Elon Musk is amazing for their fucking Twitter engagement, and, like, what you saw was, like, a fucking, like, a promotional hit piece, right? Like, it was all orchestrated, everything that it was. Like, dude, I'm telling you, man, like, it wasn't as they seem. Like, that guy was playing the idiot part because, obviously, like, how do you say, like, conviene? Like, it's convenient for him, like, financially speaking. And then the Winklevoss there were just like, dude, David Portnoy is going to promote my fucking platform indirectly, right? So it was all promotional piece, right? But most importantly, and again, Bitcoin doesn't give a fuck, right? But most importantly, this is awesome, because and to add the public company buying Bitcoin as a reserve, like, it's really cool because Bitcoin is now moving mainstream, right? So this new, like, epoch, like, when the fucking bull run commences, dude, this is gonna be 50 times as fucking crazy as it was in 2017. Like, I remember getting to I remember getting to an Uber driver, and this Uber driver, you know what, like, you could tell this dude has never heard of Bitcoin in his life, and he just turns like, "Have you heard about Bitcoin?" Like, everyone and their mother was talking about Bitcoin, bro. So, like, now that it's so socially accepted, and there's the infrastructure to onboard people, which was a major problem in 2017, dude. Oh my god, it's gonna be fucking wild.
I'm not staying home during it. Fuck it.
Anyone got some more thoughts?
Yeah, I have something to bring up, especially in regards to the bull run. But what do you guys think about Tether's manipulation? Because I know that the daily volume of Bitcoin and Tether are somewhat similar. I believe it was Bitfinex that just lost or recently lost their appeal with the court in New York. And I don't have any like tangible evidence to prove this, but almost kind of my intuition, I wouldn't be surprised if they've just been pumping this up a lot one last time while they can, since they basically already lost their party they were having. And, you know, obviously long-term, I'm extremely bullish on Bitcoin, but I think to say that the price is not manipulated would be very naive. So I'm curious to hear what your guys' thoughts are on that.
Dude, everything's manipulated, man. Like the stock market, like in trading, there's a rule of thumb that like the whales are really fucking with the price. And this comes to stocks and this comes to Bitcoin. Now, in regards to Tether, this Tether FUD's really old, right? It's been going around since 2017. Now, something pretty significant happened. They came on record, Bitfinex, and said that they only had, I think it was like 60 to 70% backing up Tether, which I think that's even bullshit. But most importantly, what happened is that the price of Tether, the actual price of Tether, because it's supposed to be worth a dollar, dipped. But what happened is that over time, Tether started to stabilize. So what that signified is that the community and the market actually didn't give a fuck that it was whether it was fully backed or not. Right now, it is a major problem in the sense that they have Tether has its tentacles in everything, right? It's a major, like, whether we like it or not, it is the de facto stable coin, and people do use it to kind of park their money a little bit to try to make money trading, right? But if Tether disappeared tomorrow, you know, what would happen, in my humble opinion, is like, yes, the immediate Bitcoin price would definitely take a hit, but another serpent would just go and take its head, go and take its place, right? Like and the community really spoke, and you could actually go check out CoinMarketCap and you could see the price of Tether, and you could see that there's volatility, but you could see that that volatility started on a very specific date. Before that, the price was very stable. It was just worth a dollar. After that date, the value was either above a dollar or below a dollar, which that shouldn't happen if it was a stable coin, right? So what that signifies is that the market, right, the market didn't fucking care that it was backed or not, right? And yes, Bitfinex is really fucking shady, dude. They're shady as hell. Abso-fucking-lutely. They've done some shady shit. I can spend the next half hour talking about all the shady shit they did. But what's most important is that it seems like the market doesn't care. Now, in terms of pumping up the price, you can make a pretty good argument saying that the market cap of Tether, if you look at CoinMarketCap and you check it out, it's actually increased over time. I think they have, correct me if I'm wrong here, guys, I think they have I think it's like some very significant amount. They have, their total market cap is 12 billion at the moment, so they have a pretty significant amount. And, you know, it's supposedly that $12 billion is backed, and that $12 billion is sitting in a bank, right? And that's some bullshit. I don't even think 50% of that. They don't have $50 billion just sitting in a bank.
Well, they can't be audited. They can't pass. I mean, well, yeah.
They can't.
They really can't do
it audit,
obviously.
They can't. But it's interesting. Like, go check out, you know, dude, I've been down this rabbit hole many times because, you know, but man, this is really old. Dude, this has been going, this Tether FUD, what I like to call it, has been happening since 2017, man.
Are you aware of Brock Pierce?
Yeah, I know who Brock Pierce is. But okay. It's not really him. It's not really him, dude. Like he's a Dave Portney of the Bitcoin space, man. Like he's a showman. But it's actually I think it's Paolo and the other guy, the Bitfinex CEO, super shady people that are kind of like the brainchild behind the Tether. But they, what they did is that they leveraged Brock Pierce's fame to kind of get that off the ground. But Brock Pierce is definitely not the brains behind it.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. But I think it's really interesting what he's doing, because basically right now, I forget her name, but some lady who works for some organization in the federal government passed this law where basically if you run for president, you can't be investigated. And right now, Brock Pierce, like randomly in, I forget the name of the conference, but it was some online conference, he randomly announced he was running for president. And there's like this whole rabbit hole of him, you know, choosing to arbitrarily run for president at this specific point in time, which is, you know, so random, just because he wants to get out of the investigations with Tether. So, but yeah, I appreciate the answer. I think it's really interesting. And I feel like, you know, just from a logical perspective, if we have this awesome technology that can truly free humanity, I definitely think they would try and mess with it a lot and try and really wreck a lot of people and give them false hope, crash the market, nobody expects it. But yeah, so we'll see. Yeah. Thank you.
I mean, like, look, bro, like, here's the thing, right? Like, you don't need to trade, right? Like, and that's why I always tell people, like, if you want to look at the health of Bitcoin, don't look at the price, look at the hash rate, right? So even and because the thing that and you're totally right, the price is fucking manipulated as shit, and whales are just trying to constantly accumulate more, and that's just the name of the game. That happens in the stock market too, right? So the way that you could avoid that, right? Like, I don't trade. I wake up every morning and I do a line of sats, right? And I do that every single day, and that way I dollar cost average into Bitcoin to kind of feed my addiction, right? And that way I don't have to deal with the volatility. If you know, if when Bitcoin hit 14K last summer, I fucking FOMO'd into that. Hell yeah, right? But you know, when Bitcoin hit like 6K, I FOMO'd into that as well. And over time, that averages out, man. And you perform, like, the longer you're in, dude, you perform crazy, like, in terms of percentage return and your time preference as well. Like, if you're not in a hurry, right, wait 5-10 years, man, and you know, like, you're gonna do very good for yourself. Just have patience and just make sure that you you accumulate every day.
For sure, man, for sure.
All right.
Also, wake up in the morning and do some lines
of sets. Yeah, I was just going to say, I think Nico killed it with that one. Wake up in the morning and do a line of sets. Jesus Christ. All right, so last week we did a new segment and where we described a meme, but we're not going to go into a full depth discussion on it cuz we're about to wrap up, but I'm going to show the meme and then I'll describe it for the audio listeners. And so this meme, I forget exactly who created it, but it's of a Bitcoin maximalist in an army uniform, and he's kneeling, and he's on fire, and there's a bunch of, like, bombs and missiles and knives going into his back, and they all have a bunch of different shitcoin names, and then he's sitting there, like, kneeled with his arms out, like, you know, with, like the famous Jesus pose in Rio, and then on the bottom there's like a kid sleeping, and it says newbies entering the space. And so I think you can see that that kind of mentality even on this show earlier, of with like Dave Portnoy, of how we were talking about you know, he's getting into shitcoin and he's trying to come around and he's got a big ego. And you know, a bunch of us maximalists, toxic maximalists out here are just, you know, we're humble stackers, and we, you know, we get really heated and passionate, and we don't want to see people get wrecked in the shitcoin casinos and all the scams. And so we do our best to, you know, elucidate the truth of Bitcoin and sound money. And so, you know, this meme is a little self-explanatory. Bitcoin maximalists are just out here trying to make sure that, that people don't get wrecked in the markets. And so I think on that note, guys, we're going to wrap it up. But anyone got a few closing words, closing thoughts?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Optimus. Thanks for having me, Nick. This show is awesome. You guys should definitely subscribe to Bitcoin Kindergarten.
There you go.
Thank you for coming out every fucking week. You guys, and Optimus says this a lot, and I really agree with it. You guys make the show.
Awesome. Awesome, guys. All right. Well, I think on that note, we love you guys. We'll, this is episode, I believe it's 18 of Bitcoin Kindergarten. And as long as blocks keep coming in, we'll be here every Thursday. All right. Peace out, guys.
Peace.